joins us each and every weekday morning at this time. Presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Pierre? How's the hearing?
Excellent, JR. Good morning to you, little Sean.
Good morning, Pierre.
I can hear by your voice, Pierre, that you had to shout maybe a little bit more than you normally would because of that crowd last night.
It was loud. There's no question it was loud. There have been a lot of loud buildings. I remember the last game six they played in that building was against Pittsburgh. That was really loud, too. So it's hard to compare from night to night, but that was obviously extremely loud.
That's not far from where you live, Pierre. Have you seen, and the new rink is going to be open for this fall, and they spent a pile of money on it. Have they in any way, when they're putting together the plans for the rink, and I know it's going to be bigger, and what makes the Nassau County Coliseum is part of it fun is just the intimacy of it. Have they tried to make it so it'll be similar, or is it just not going to be? Is it going to be a typical rink?
They've really tried to make it similar. They've tried to make the roof a little bit lower, and they've tried to make the lower bowl a little bit tighter. So the answer is yes. They've tried to bring a little bit of the coziness over. John Ledecky, one of the owners of the New York Islanders, he'd spent a lot of time on this project, setting it up and talking to fans and wanting to bring some of the charisma from Uniondale over to Belmont, where the new arena is going to be. So they've worked diligently on trying to do that.
They've gone from 14 five guys to 17, so nothing crazy. JR commented, and you're there. Do you really feel like, and again, I know it's great in every playoff, but in this particular case, that this is worth basically a goal a game for the New York Islanders because it is so over the top?
I don't know if I can say a goal a game, but it's worth something, I can tell you that. And it starts in the warm-up, but it's definitely worth something. And the one thing that is really apparent, the control that the players have, even though they're enthusiastic and they're jacked up and everything else, they play under control. They're not out of control. And I think that starts with Barry Trotz and his message to the team. This is your role. This is how you have to play. If you don't play that way, you're not going to play a ton. And if you do play that way, you're going to play a ton. So he has them under control. There's no question about it. I'll give you an example. Last night, it's a straight matchup game. They're trying to shut down the Pasternak, Marchand, Bergeron line. It's just a straight matchup game. Matt Barzal in that game, a deciding game, played 11 minutes. 11 minutes in the game. Not because it was a knock on him, but because he doesn't kill penalties and he doesn't play in matchup situations. So they didn't get nearly as much ice time, or his line didn't, as they usually would. And again, that just speaks to how Barry Trotz deploys his assets and how he keeps everybody under control on his bench.
Pierre, I've talked to a couple of players who played under Barry Trotz, and they said he's not necessarily the biggest and best tactician necessarily. Maybe he hires assistants who more specialize in that, but his talents lay in other ways. You're there between the benches. Would you agree with that assessment, or is he a real good X's and O's guy and a good bench manager?
I don't know about the X's and O's part, but I'll tell you one thing. His asset management is phenomenal. He understands who to have on the ice at the right time of the game. For instance, when a goalie pull situation happens, more times than not, he's going to make sure he has J.G. Pageau on the ice. He's going to make sure that he has Casey Cizikas on the ice, and he's going to make sure he has Cal Clutterbuck. So what he has is he has a left-handed center iceman in Cizikas, a right-handed center iceman in Pageau, and a guy that's unbelievable on the boards in Cal Clutterbuck. That's just one example of how he manages his assets. The other night in Boston, game five on the road, he's not going to get the matchups that he wants. So he flip-flops his center iceman because Brock Nelson is not playing as well as J.G. Pageau. So Nelson goes deeper in the lineup, Pageau goes up in the lineup, and they're trying to create more of a matchup environment. It's just he really handles his assets fantastically well. In terms of the tactics, I think a lot of that is deferred to his assistants.
Also, knowing him very well, does none of this work if he isn't a selfless, no-ego, salt-of-the-earth human being that at the end of the day, to implement all this long-term, is that a huge factor?
I would say yes. And I'll use an example of what Sean's talking about, JR. The other night, when he could have got really squirrely and mad and angry and started yelling at his team, which a lot of coaches would do, especially in that environment in Boston in Game 5, when his team had a substantial lead and lost, and all of a sudden it's a one-goal spread, 5-4. Rather than yelling and screaming, I was right there, calls a timeout, brings everybody over, and he says to them politely, he says, "Fellas, we're sitting back. We got to get back attacking. Let's get off our heels and get on our toes. Let's stop laying back." Didn't yell, didn't scream. Obviously, he had to raise his voice so people could hear him, But that's basically the message that he displayed to his team. And they went out and they were flawless the last, you know, probably 2 or 3 minutes of that game.
In 12 playoff games, J.G. Pageau has 13 points, which is tied for third in NHL playoff scoring. We're very familiar with his talents here in Ottawa. Is he the perfect player for the way the Islanders play hockey and the way that Barry Trotz coaches hockey?
Yes, he is. And I can tell you right now, it starts all the way at the top. As soon as they got him, obviously they signed him to a long-term extension. Lou Lamoriello has been fond of J.G. Pageau for a very long period of time. He admires players like that. They're coachable. They're selfless, as you talked about with Coach Trotz, Sean. And I think the biggest thing about JG is he really accepts the role that it's created for him. Now, last night he had 2 assists in the game, but that wasn't his job last night. His job last night was to go head-to-head with Patrice Bergeron. It's going to be a straight matchup game. I talked about it before the initial puck even dropped, and that's exactly what Barry did. It was pretty easy to decipher. Zajac and Palmieri are his two wingers, both guys that came from New Jersey that are plugged into the Lou Lamoriello-style system. And it worked fantastically well, but JG's a perfect player in that system.
Before I ask my question, Pierre, I'm going to admit I'm not a Charlie Coyle fan, but I know it's a team game. Just in comparison, how would you look at the move of bringing Coyle over and the huge extension versus what the Islanders did for Pageau at very comparable money? The effect that have either, and you may like Coyle, but I'm just saying the effect that both have had on those teams.
Well, if you look at it, you've got to be fair. Charlie's been a different kind of a player there. Charlie's a Boston kid. They brought him in because there's a sense of familiarity there. Played at Boston University, kid that went to Thayer Academy. They knew him really well. I would say that this year playoff wasn't as good. I'd say his first playoff back in 2018-2019 was really solid. In fact, they went to the Stanley Cup final, and Charlie was really, really effective for them. The last two haven't been as good. So, I mean, it's easy to cherry pick on this, but I would say that JG has fit in better over the 2 years he's been with the Islanders than Charlie, who's been there in Boston for 3 years. But to be fair to Charlie, his first playoff in Boston, you can go look it up, he was fantastic.
Yeah. If we want to compare Islanders and Bruins acquisitions at the trade deadline this year, Kyle Palmieri had 4 goals in the series up here, and Taylor Hall had 1, and it was into an empty net in game 1.
I talked about it before the game. I don't know if you watched our show or not, but that's exactly what I said. I said, Listen, it's put up time for that line with Craig Smith and David Krejci and Taylor Hall. Taylor Hall got 1 goal in game 1. It was into an empty net. Craig Smith had 1 goal in game 3. The 2 games the Bruins won, they got offense from their second line. I said, if that line doesn't score, they're not going to win. And the reason why is because I knew, just knowing Barry, there was no way Bergeron, Marchand, or Pasternak 5-on-5 were going to make a difference. They might on the power play, and they did with Marchand getting 2 goals. But 5-on-5, they weren't going to make a difference because there was going to be 5 people committed to shutting down 3. And so that was going to open up a ton of room for the other players, and the other players didn't take advantage.
You know, the opportunity cost to acquire Taylor Hall wasn't huge. Everybody thought it was a good move. He was coming into a
situation, too. Don't forget that.
Yeah, and he was coming into a thing where he didn't have to be the guy, so not necessarily the pressure. Do you think his performance in this series will give the Bruins pause for thought about potentially re-signing him?
I think so, yeah. I think so. He was underwhelming. Now, I want to be totally fair to him because I think it's important to be fair to players when you're judging, especially in these situations. I think he got hurt in the fight with Scott Mayfield, if you want to know the truth.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't think he's – I think it'll be reported that he was not 100%. Taylor's a big guy, thick guy, but he's not big like Mayfield. Mayfield's 6'6". Mayfield stung him, and Mayfield, I think, had his way with him in that. And that was the matchup that the Islanders were worried about forwards against that line. They were worried about D, and so was Nick Leddy and Scotty Mayfield. So Leddy's a really good skater, very efficient defensive player, has to play on the left side, not the right side. He can't pivot to his right, but he's very good on the left. And Mayfield is outstanding on the right side, so that's a head-to-head matchup with Taylor Hall. And for a 6'6" guy, he can really move. So that was a good matchup for the Islanders, and that really caused some problems for Taylor Hall.
Would you agree with Taylor Hall that when any of the physical skills go, he quite simply doesn't have the vision or hockey sense to operate? It's not from a lack of trying?
No, it's always been part of the deal. There's a powerhouse there. There's unbelievable horsepower under the engine, or under the hood, I should say. Yeah. But the problem is that the creativity's not always there, and probably you wouldn't say he's the most creative player in the league. What he is a straight line player that has to get the puck in transition and just drive hard to the net. And if he doesn't do that, then you're not going to get a lot of quality playmaking out of him.
So Patrice Bergeron, 35 year left on the deal. Brad Marchand, 33, but 4 years left at a very digestible number. Then we get to David Krejci, 35, UFA. Mm-hmm. Taylor Hall, we just talked about. Tuukka Rask, UFA, 34 years old. Do you think the mandate from in Boston is going to be as long as Marchand and Bergeron in particular, and of course Pastrnak, is needless to say, is in there as well. We're going to run it back and keep trying to push this rock over the top of the hill? Or do you think they'll take this opportunity with some salary cap space to maybe do, I'm not talking about tearing it all down, but do a fairly major reconstruction of the roster this offseason?
It depends on what happens with Krejci. We're going to find out pretty quick. If they're able to get Krejci to take a hometown discount and they keep him there, then I think they're going to do what you were just talking about and try to keep it alive and keep it going. But if Krejci doesn't, they don't have the internal. I know they have Studnicka, but I don't know if he's a second-line player in the league right now. Basically, what happened was Donnie's first draft as general manager, they missed. You know, they missed on. They had 13, 14, and 15 in the first round. They got DeBrusque, but then they missed on Zboril, and they missed on Sinishin. So when you look at it, they could have had Barzal, they could have had Shabbat, they could have had Kyle Connor. There are a lot of guys they could have had that they didn't get, and that would have changed the dynamic of their team. So that first draft kind of put them in a tough spot in Boston when they had those three first-round picks in a pretty deep draft. So that's one of the things they got to look at. But I would say that you're probably looking at, if they don't get Krejci signed, you're probably looking at a bit of an overhaul.
The sting of that, Pierre, you pointed out that draft, but would you say overall that just not drafting good enough has finally caught up with the organization?
Well, part of it's too, they've tried to stay relevant. So if you look at it, you got to be fair to these guys.
Yeah.
The NHL is a tough business, as you know. So they win the Cup in 2011. They go to the final in 2013. They go to the final again in 2019. They're relevant that entire time. They're very relevant that entire time as a franchise. So they were trying to keep it on the rails, which I totally understand. So sometimes they were sacrificing picks. They weren't picking very high, obviously, and some of the drafts weren't as good, even though they were pretty steady. They weren't as good. So, to be fair to Donnie, the one caveat to this whole thing is his first draft wasn't particularly good, and that's kind of put them in a tough spot.
All right, Game 6 tonight. Vegas is back home with a chance to finish off Colorado. The Golden Knights absolutely dominated them in the games in Vegas earlier in the series. What are your expectations for tonight along those lines?
Yeah, well, if they don't get MacKinnon going offensively, I don't think they have much of a chance to win on the Colorado side of things. It would require, if MacKinnon didn't score tonight, it would require Grubauer to probably make close to 45 saves, give up maybe one goal, and get a bunch of offense from other people because they need Nathan going. And you got to give Vegas a lot of credit. And Pete DeBoer is a heck of a coach. He's done a real good job with that team, getting them back in after getting pile-driven 7-1 in Game 1 with Robin Leonard in goal. And so all comes down to star power for Colorado. And if they don't get MacKinnon going, then I don't see how they're going to have a Game 7.
Real sense of urgency on the Vegas side to finish this off in Game 6 and not worry about going back for a Game 7 and not looking forward, but saying, hey, let's get this done with and let's head on to Montreal play Montreal?
Yeah, I think so. Just, again, knowing their team, having done so many games there since they've come into the league, they always have a sense of purpose and urgency at home. And I would say this year in particular, because there has been the disappointment of the last 2 years, you know, losing in San Jose and then obviously losing last year to Dallas. I think there's definitely a sense of urgency that they want to get this done. They don't want to risk fate by going back to Colorado for Game 7.
If the series ends tonight, you know, your bosses at NBA, will we see some semblance of one of the series starting this weekend? Do you know that?
Yeah, well, I would say yes. That's all I can say to you,
okay.
But I would say yes.
Okay, fair enough. I want to talk to you quickly about the Norris Trophy nominees announced yesterday. Victor Hedman, fifth straight year. He's only won it once, is a nominee. And then for the first time, Adam Fox and Cale Makar. Do you think that's the right top three that were chosen?
Yes, I do. Those are on my ballot. When you put your ballot in, you got to put five in.
Who are the guys that were close for you?
I'm going to tell you right now because my ballot's right here.
Nice.
Christopher Letang and Shea Theodore.
Wow. So you consider on Letang a major comeback year, Pierre?
Yeah, he had a huge comeback year. If you look at Pittsburgh and the way they played, if they don't have Letang and Crosby, they're not even probably a playoff team. Those guys were just so darn good this year. It was crazy. That was my ballot. My five, the three guys that are the nominees, and then I had Theodore and I had Letang.
From a stat side, do you think Darnell Nurse will get some love? Because he certainly.
I'm sure he will. Sure Darnell will. Yeah. You know, again, everybody quantifies things differently.
Yeah.
I'm sure he. I'm sure he was on a ton of ballots. I'm sure he was.
How much more difficult as you came together with your names for all of these ballots was it for you because we didn't have interdivision play?
Big. It was very difficult. You had to watch a lot of games and you had to watch a lot of tape. Because you can't just do it by numbers. If you're just doing it by numbers, then it's a pretty easy selection process. You just take the top five guys with all the top numbers. But that's not how I did my ballot. I've never done my ballot that way. And so you got to watch a lot of games. You got to watch a lot of tape.
Points-wise, Victor Hedman had, he's right in the mix with those other two guys. But some people considered this, especially the second half to his year, to be a bit of a down year dealing with an injury. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep, 100%. The most consistent defenseman in the NHL this year was Adam Fox, for consistency in every aspect of the game. The only defenseman that was a point-a-game player was Cale Makar. He's the only guy in the league. So if you're doing it by numbers, he had the best numbers per capita. He was 100%. He was 44 games, I think, just going off the top of my head.
Yep.
44 points.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's impressive. He's the only guy that had that. Fox was amazingly consistent the entire year, both offensively and defensively.
I'll ask you your personal philosophy. Doesn't mean it applies for everyone. Mm-hmm. With some people, when they vote on things, whether it be halls of fame or whether it be, in this case, awards in sports, there's the adage of you kind of got to make your name first before I'm going to make you number one. Yeah. And other people are like, hey, if you're the best guy, you're the best guy. I don't care if you're a rookie. What is Pierre McGuire's philosophy on that?
If you're the best guy, you're the best guy. I don't care where you come from. I don't care if it's your first year in the league or the 20th year in the league. And if you're the best guy, you're the best guy. I've been talking about it all year. Stone should have been a nominee for the Selke Trophy. He is. Marchand should have been as well. It was a tough group with Bergeron, Barkov. And they're the guys. But if you really wanted to be fair, and I'm sure there's a bit of a bias because some pundits don't really like Brad, should never equate into the voting system. That guy had an amazing year offensively, and it can be argued he's the best defensive player in the league. Just watch him shorthanded. It's just crazy how good he is. So, again, I just go by whomever is the best. It doesn't matter how many years of service. I'm just trying to think here if I can look at my ballot just to give you an example.
Would you say that Hughes in Vancouver and Heskin in Dallas just had average years, Pierre?
I would say that Haskin and Gier was average, and I would say a big part of that was COVID and the weather situation and the lack of rhythm for Dallas. They had a really, really difficult year there. And for Vancouver, I think, again, it was a lot COVID-related for a lot of the players there. They just had issues there the whole time. It was really, really difficult for both those teams, and I think it affected their players big time.
Okay, last one for you. We were talking Ray Shearer, of course, who began his management career here in Ottawa and has moved on and been a longtime general manager in the league, has landed a senior advisor role to Bill Guerin in Minnesota. And we're just kind of spitballing about how here in Ottawa, maybe it might be a great idea if they brought in a similar type of veteran experienced voice here in Ottawa. Do you think that sort of thing is necessary? Not just in Ottawa, but in all organizations to have that. Yeah, been there, done that kind of guy, especially with a younger general manager like Pierre Dorion is.
I think it's really important to have somebody you can bounce ideas off of. I think it's important to have somebody that understands the league, understands the players in the league, and I don't mean just the players on the ice. I mean the players away from the ice. Who's the general manager? What's his mindset? Who are the scouts? Who's pushing the general manager to make trades in all these different marketplaces? You need to be involved in a National Hockey League team. It really helps a lot to have information. And to have people that have a ton of information that can help you make better informed decisions. Ray, this conversation with Ray and the Minnesota Wild has been going on for a long time. You have to understand the genesis of it. Billy Guerin was traded to the Pittsburgh Penguins, the general manager that acquired him, Ray Shearer. When Billy was done playing, Ray was still the manager. Ray got him going in management. Randy Sexton and Ray Shearer are best friends from St. Lawrence. And also, obviously, from working together in Ottawa. So Randy's now the top assistant to Billy out in Minnesota. So it's a perfectly formed group. There's a lot of trust there. They've always shared ideas, and they see things maybe not always the same, but they see things where once they have a meeting, they can come out of the meeting and say, okay, you know what, even though we disagree, we're going to agree just because that's how they work. They've got enough trust.
And in the situation here in Ottawa, Pierre, would you just see that as a positive? It's not taking a job, it's coming into support. And if you were given that job, would the first thing you do is extend Pierre Dorion's contract and say, listen, we're going to work on this for the next 3 to 5 years, and let's build a team right here versus coming in to make somebody nervous?
I think Pierre's contract should have been extended already, to be perfectly blunt with you. He's done a really good job there. They're one of the real, I think, going to be one of the real top teams in the league. This reminds me a lot of when you saw Tampa starting to come along, when you see the Islanders starting to come along. You know, I made mention last night, and I got a really nice text from somebody close to him about how, you know, Lou Lamoriello is a very, very dear friend of mine, and I respect him a ton. So I gave him credit for what's gone on with the Islanders, but people forget conveniently that Gar Snow is a guy, a lot of these draft picks that are playing for him, whether it's Brock Nelson, talking about the Islanders, or Ryan Pulock, or Adam Pellick, or Scotty Mayfield, those guys weren't drafted by Lou's regime. They were drafted and cultivated by Gar Snow's regime, and Gar did a heck of a job there, and he deserves some credit for that. And it reminds me a lot of what's going on in Ottawa right now.
All right, good stuff. On that note, we'll let you go. Rest your voice. We got a big game 6 coming up tonight out in Vegas. We'll talk about it with you tomorrow morning, and maybe at that point be able to set up the NHL's semifinal series.
Maybe I'll know where I'm going.
Yes, exactly. Well, it's is it east or west? Do you no idea yet or what?
See, so it's going to be interesting, JR. I'll just leave you this. I'm sure the fans are going to be bored of hearing this, but what happens if Vegas loses tonight and there's a game 7 Saturday? I don't think I'll be going out to do that. So the game, there has to be an NBC game on Sunday. So I would imagine that Tampa and the Islanders would start Sunday.
Right.
And so, yeah, you're not getting from Colorado to Tampa for an afternoon game. That's not working. So I would imagine that our crew would go down there, and then maybe we would flip-flop.
Gotcha.
I have to be on a conference call today at 4:30. To go over Canadian health protocols, so I would imagine that. So I would imagine that our group's going to be doing Montreal and whomever wins in the West.
Gotcha. Sounds good. All right. Look forward to it. Really appreciate the time and insight, as always, and we'll chat again tomorrow.
Have a good one. Take care, everybody.